We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. Last night, Michael, the New Orleans Pelicans defeated the Miami Heat in an actual basketball game. Does that mean they are now the second best team in the NBA?
Well, I mean, we're told that they defeated the Heat, but if a game is played and nobody films it, does it really count?
So what, are you saying you didn't get to watch that show? Because there were so many channels carrying it.
No, I listened to radio, and man, I mean, one thing I learned about myself last night is I have the imagination of like a 12-year-old. I had no clue what was going on. Like none whatsoever. I mean, we had decent announcers, Sean Kelly. I mean, he does a fine job, but it's just on me. I could never do that. And I don't see the appeal at all at listening to it on the radio. So
it was pretty exciting when he said, Anthony Davis with the block on Bosch.
Yeah, I had no idea what it was. I pictured it like Japanese anime, like just all the bright colors and like lines swirling in and Davis blocking it 50 feet into the stands. But I mean, the one cool part was listening and just hearing the fans chant, "We want Russ." You know, that was pretty cool. That stood out on radio. But man, it's both exciting and frustrating. Exciting, we have Pelicans basketball back, but they're teasing us and we can't watch it.
You can look at the box score afterwards. That's the same thing. Yeah. It's numbers. Numbers are exciting.
Yeah, that's what we do anyway, so why not?
It's true. Yeah, so, I mean, there's going to be a few things we're going to talk about from that game, at least if there are indications, but we got to talk about something else first, since this is our first podcast since it happened. So, one person who should have been playing last night, although I guess you could argue two, but one person who should have been playing last night didn't get a single minute, Tyreek. He's got an injury. Should we just like crawl into a hole, cry about our luck, talk about the injury bug for the rest of the year already? So it's just going to be in our plans?
No, I mean, because that's going to waste like 5 or 6 podcasts worth of material. We need to save that for the regular season. But I mean, it's all relative. It's a little bit frustrating because you would like to see these guys getting time together. I mean, I guess some saving graces are that, you know, Tyreek has already been through a training camp. He knows the system for the most part. You know, it's not some kind of devastating injury where he has to spend a ton of time rehabbing and can't go to the practices. I mean, he's there picking up on everything, and he'll also most likely be ready by the regular season, if not the end of preseason. But, you know, as much as you try to sell it, it is still a little frustrating and a little concerning that with things like a hamstring and, you know, even after his surgery, he was cautious to say he was 100% for most of the summer, that, you know, these things could linger. So I just hope that they get him back 100%. There's no issues at all. And I think that's why we saw as long as a time frame as we did. I mean, 3 to 5 weeks, we saw Tyreek basically play on, like, broken ankles and torn up knees after, you know, not even missing a game. I remember that Denver game that he really braved through it. So, yeah. You know, he could play. So I'm hoping that the timetable's so long so that way they get it back to 100% and it doesn't pop back up into the season. But yeah, I mean, I guess little silver lining is that it'll give some other guys some minutes. Like, you know, like we saw Babbitt got last night and he made the most of it. So, you know, maybe it can be decent or at least neutral in the long run.
So, but here's a question. Last year, he did get hurt in training camp, just like he did this year. And he started the last year. I remember by the end of November, I was kind of, my stomach was hurting at the thought of that contract when I hadn't been before I watched him play for that first month. He was not good. Is there a chance we're going to see that again? Because once again, he's going to be coming out of the gate off of injury and maybe not be in the flow of things or in shape.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest concern would be not being in basketball shape, and I think that's possible. But I think the bigger issue with last year was, one, he didn't have Ryan Anderson, because we saw his numbers skyrocket when Ryan Anderson came back.
Yeah.
Two, you know, we've heard numerous times now from Monty and even Tyreek himself that there were just issues with how he was being used and Monty really not knowing how to use somebody like Tyreek Evans. So I don't think it was the injury he suffered in training camp as much as those two factors. And from everything we hear from Monty, he's willing to let, you know, the reins off with Evans, and Ryan Anderson is back and shooting those beautiful three balls that you love already. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think that there's anything to worry about as long as, you know, Monty sticks to his word and Ryan Anderson stays on the court.
Yeah, I mean, Anderson hit 3 threes last night. Luke Babbitt hit 5. The Darius Miller missed 5. But altogether, they took 32 threes.
You better mention Jimmer by name or people are going to come after you. You got to remember, there's rabid Jimmer fans listening to this podcast now.
Jimmer took shots? He played 30 minutes last night and hit 3 of his 4 three-pointers. So, yes, he was out there too. I'm terribly sorry. But, you know, just overall, do you think there's any chance that we're going to see the Pelicans team when the actual season starts and Anthony Davis is getting more than 11 minutes and Omar Sheik's getting more than 6 minutes, a team that's going to regularly hit 30 three-pointers attempted in a game? Any chance?
I mean, the one thing, as many as they shot, you look at the starters and the four guys that are definitely projected to start, Drew, Gordon, Ashik, and Davis, and combined, they only took 3. You know, granted, you know, Drew, Eric, and Davis didn't play a lot of minutes, but I don't know if that starting unit, depending on who they put at the three, is going to take a bunch. I mean, Holiday, what do you expect him to take? 1.5 to 2?
Yeah, he should take more.
Yeah, so I don't know. If the starting unit is going to get a ton of minutes, which it didn't in this game, I don't expect that unit to be a high-volume shooting. I mean, you look at the ones who took them, and yeah, Anderson will get a lot of minutes, and he took one about every 2 minutes he was on the court, which, you know, that's what he should be doing. But Babbitt took 10. I don't even know if he'll be in the rotation. Like you said, Jimmer got 30 minutes. I expect him to get like a third of that, if that, when the regular season starts. So I don't know. A lot of those threes came from guys who are either not going to be in the rotation or have a much smaller role than they had last night. You got to figure Tyreek's going to eat up a lot of those minutes, and he's not going to shoot a lot. So, yeah, it was fun to see last night, but I definitely don't expect anywhere near 30. I would be happy with, you know, low to mid 20s though.
Last year we took 15.
Yeah. And the team, I mean, the Heat, the Spurs, and the Thunder were all in the middle of the pack around 23, 24. You know, I think that's fine. I think that's reasonable. And, you know, when we had Anderson, we were a little over 20. So add Jimmer to the mix, add maybe a half a three ball attempt for Davis per game this year, maybe add Drew and Eric take a little more. I think it's possible to get to that middle of the pack 23-24 number.
All right, so my next question for you, should we read anything into Darius Miller starting with the other four major big guys and getting 32 minutes? Should we read anything into that, or is it just noise?
Yeah, I mean, my theory was that, one, the game was in Kentucky. You know, so they were, you know, Monty was doing it kind of as a nod to Darius, and also, you know, maybe a little bit for the fans. Two, he knows the system. I mean, John Solomons has been in the system for, what, 3 or 4 days going into last night. Tyreek's hurt. I don't see it. I think it was something that, you know, was done just to help ease a transition and maybe give Darius a shot. I mean, I think he's going to have a shot at winning that job, whatever you consider that job. I consider it 7/8 man, you know, who's quote unquote a starter, but I do not think that he's the leader in the clubhouse. I don't think that Monty is planning on him being the starter, but for multiple reasons last night, he was the guy that Monty chose. I mean, how about you? Do you see it differently?
No. I mean, one thing we've seen about Monty, just the reality, like for the past 2 years, is he will put a guy in a position to give him something, and he'll let that guy hang himself after about 8 games and pull him, and that guy's ass will be nailed to the bench for the next 3 weeks as he tries out somebody else. We saw it with Aminu. We saw it with Miller multiple times. We've seen it with a bunch of other players. He lets people try and hopes he gets something from them, and he commits to them. I mean, that's respectable. I mean, he doesn't jerk them around. He says, I'm going to give you like 8-9 games for you to give me something. And if you aren't giving me what I need, I'm going to go to somebody else. And that's better for a player if you're trying to break in and get a significant role, to be able to know you have at least like a little bit of leeway for, you know, a few games, rather than if go out there in this game and I screw up, I'm done. Although I'm sure at the very end, after you haven't given him very much, it gets kind of nerve wracking to know when you're going to be yanked.
Yeah. But let me ask you this. Was his 0-5 from 3 the worst part of his stat line for you?
No.
What was?
3 rebounds in 32 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I brought it up. I was wondering if you would think the same thing, but yeah, I mean, 0-5 from 3, I'm happy that he took them, and, you know, he's going to make them. He's going to be a 32 to 38% three-point shooter. Those will always even out, but again, given a handful of minutes, 32, a lot of them without Ashik and Davis, so it's not exactly like he's on the court with ferocious rebounders, and he only pulls down 3.
Patrick Young. Don't forget about Patrick.
Yeah, but I mean, Luke Babbitt in less time gets 6 minutes, or gets 6 boards.
Yeah, I mean, but that's always been the issue with Darius Miller. I mean, I remember when I first did the very first statistical analysis of his game when we selected him. He's never ever been a rebounder. He's listed as 6'8", but he has even Draft Express, if you go back and read what they talk about him during his junior year at Kentucky, they said he's more point guard than small forward. And I think that's pretty accurate. He's a pretty solid passer.
Yeah, I mean, he had to play that role for us at the end of last year. How about, I mean, we're basically talking about the small forward position here and talking about Tyreek and Miller, before we get to the obvious guy to start the season at small forward, is there any chance, even though it's not his quote-unquote, you know, true position, that we see Luke Babbitt at small forward this season?
Yes. I don't think there's actually any question based on what Monty said during media day. Because when he went and listed small forwards, the names he said were Miller, Salmons, and Babbitt are the guys he was looking at. So, I mean, I know people like to think of Babbitt as, you know, mini Ryan Anderson, and no one really wants to see Luke Babbitt trying to guard a powerful small forward, but that's probably his best role. So I wouldn't be shocked if we saw a Luke Babbitt experiment for 8 to 10 games, followed by a John Solomon's experiment, followed by a Miller experiment, and then back to Babbitt again.
I mean, let's just stick on each end. Let's go on the offensive end first. Would you have any issues with, just on the offensive end, a Drew, Eric Gordon, Luke Babbitt, Anthony Davis, Omer Asik, starting lineup, just on the offensive end? How do you think that looks?
I think that's fine, because you have your two penetrators and you have a shooter who can hopefully bend defenses the way you need them to by being a threat. And Babbitt has to be respected. He wasn't like amazing knockdown, but he's good enough. You have to actually go after him. And if you go take the time and watch the James Harden 10-minute video of his awful defense, Luke Babbitt is a friggin' superstar. I was shocked. There was like 9 different highlight plays of Luke Babbitt just destroying James Harden, which is, I mean, it was unbelievable. I was expecting to see like a few Pelicans players, but Babbitt just popped out. He was amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, if we go back, I mean, I know you were a fan of it in his college days. If you put him at the small forward position and now he's covered by a small forward, you know, I think occasionally you could see Babbitt on the low block, and he was, I would say, a borderline excellent low post player in college. You know, and that's something that you could utilize from time to time and be another weapon if the other team has a standard or below average size small forward. You know, I think Babbitt could be a weapon there. I don't think the issue's on the offensive end. Now, obviously, we have to get to the defensive end. I mean, if he is the best offensive small forward option, where does he rank as far as the defensive small forward option? So let's count Salmons, Miller, and Tyreke Evans and Babbitt. Where does he rank out of those four as a defensive small forward, and how far below the other guys is he?
I have a really hard time saying I like any of those guys defensively. In fact, even Tyreke, who has all the physical tools in the world and probably could be a remarkable defensive player, I have a hard time saying he's better than average at most of the time. So Babbitt is not good, and he is probably the worst of the four. In fact, no, I shouldn't say probably. He is the worst of the four, but does it really matter when the best you could put out there is average?
Yeah, and then especially if you've got, I mean, as a coach, if I've got AD and Asik behind him, I mean, first of all, we've gone through this numerous times. How many, you know, isolation guys could create their own offense at the small forward position are you really worried about? And two, if you have AD and Asik behind him, you know, is it possible you could ask him to play a little bit more aggressive, you know, go over on off-ball screens and, you know, really use his length to press guys, and if they get by him, you have two rim protectors. I mean, I guess I just wonder, you know, especially after seeing last night and thinking about how well he played in stretches, I thought the Luke Babbitt at small forward thing would be a pure experiment, but the more I think about it, if you're really talking about him versus Miller versus Salmons, I don't know if there's a clear favorite as we speak.
Yeah, I need to see what Salmons got left in the tank, because at one point, Salmons was actually a pretty good all-around guy. So he had a couple years where he was scoring, but like his biggest ability was he would give you like 4 rebounds and 4 assists in 20 minutes. And if you gave him, played him long minutes, he would be one of those 18-6-6 guys. And this team needs a guy who can give you a little bit of something everywhere and play a little bit of defense and hit a knock down a 3 if he's open. So if he could still do that, and I don't know if he can, he is pretty old, and he hasn't had particularly good seasons recently, then I would prefer him. But honestly, in a vacuum, you put Miller and Babbitt next to each other, I like the idea of Babbitt better because he actually checks a couple more boxes. He actually does rebound, and he works at rebounding. And Miller is 100%, I mean, he was one of those players on this team when I said that we had 4 of the bottom 30 rebounders in the NBA at the end of last year, he was one of them. And when I say bottom 30, by percentage, he rebounded that little. And, you know, if you have that, and Eric Gordon's doing that, and Austin Rivers is doing that, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I think we should play a game that we should. I don't know why we haven't played this in the past, but I want to make it a tradition going forward. WWPD, what would Popovich do? And in your opinion, what would Popovich do? He's faced with these guys to be a starting small forward, or, you know, basically guys that you need to give you about 20 minutes a game at a small forward position. What do you think Popovich would do in this situation?
Call R.C. Buford and say, what the hell did you get me these guys for?
I mean, who's the most Spur guy out of these guys?
Who's this? I don't know. Probably Salmons, because he's just like such a... From everything we've heard, he is a complete and total professional in every... But, of course, you know, maybe Babbitt and Miller are too, so I have a hard time, you know, picking one, but...
Yeah, Miller, I would say Miller probably moves the ball the best out of the three.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough, but... So, okay, so...
Well, clearly you had an idea. So what do you think Popovich would do? Popovich Jr.?
I think Miller would be his guy. I think he would be trying to boost his confidence, giving him, you know, making him take hundreds of shots, and really limit the role, really make it a very specific role, and, you know, limit it, know where he's going to get his 3-point looks, and then just have that guy shooting 250 a day from every spot that he anticipates getting looks from, and just instilling confidence in those spots and asking the guy to do no more or no less than that specific role. But I think that Miller would be the most San Antonio guy out of these guys. And I think that that's the guy that Popovich would ride with. But
okay.
I don't know. But I mean, I guess my other question is, so we know that Evans is going to get a lot of minutes at this quote-unquote small forward position. I say Babbitt, Salmons, and Darius Miller. Do you see any way that more than one of these guys is in the regular rotation when everybody's healthy, or are three guys competing for one rotation spot?
It's absolutely three guys competing for one rotation spot. I don't think there's any way you could look at it otherwise. Unless there's, again, injuries, these guys are, you know, they're fighting with each other. The only chance I could possibly see is if Darius Miller somehow steals the backup shooting guard spots, but I don't see him being able to do that over Fredette and Rivers. I think both of those guys are better options than him. Even Russ Smith might be, so.
Do you think there's any way it's matchup dependent?
No.
So one guy is going to, in that magic game, one guy is going to get minutes out of these three and one only.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I really can't think of like a matchup where I would sit there and say, Darius Miller is an infinitely better choice than Luke Babbitt in this particular situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it, overall, just that bench unit, I mean, I wrote an article today for anybody who wants to check it out, but it's interesting how they, you know, the Pelicans talk about positions and, you know, they basically came out and said that the Austin Rivers point guard experiment was over, that he's going to be a quote-unquote shooting guard on the second unit, and Jimmer's going to be more the point guard, but I don't really know what any of that means. And with Tyreek being on with those guys in all likelihood, he'll be the one with the ball in his hands. And even in this game, Rivers gets 6 assists to Fredette's 3. They both have the same amount of turnover. So I don't really know or, you know, understand quote-unquote positions, but I really do love the idea of, you know, a foursome off the bench of Fredette, Rivers, Tyreek, and Ryan Anderson, and whoever the fifth is, whether it's, you know, one of Ashik or Davis, or if they give Ajinta minutes, I really think there's a potential for a really explosive bench unit.
Yeah, and that was what I was going to mention, because I read your article, of course, and you were excited about Ajinka in a lot of ways, or Ajinta, or however you're supposed to say his name. Alexi?
Oh, you're back.
Or is it Alexis?
You're back in mid-season form.
A-A? Anyways, that you wanted him on the trail, or him picking and popping for, what did you call it, velvety 17-footer?
To be clear, I don't want him on the court. My philosophy is I don't try to change Monty Williams. I think Monty will go to a 10-man rotation. So this is my assumption if he does what Monty always does. But personally, I would want the three bigs to get all 96 minutes. But yes, go ahead with the velvety 17-footer.
So the question is, he didn't get to play last night. So, and Withy got 19 minutes, and Patrick Young got 21 minutes, and, you know, Ashik got 6. So, you know, obviously, I thought that was the funniest indicator. When I looked at this and I saw Ashik got 6, what that screamed to me was, I know exactly what you're giving me, and I'm just throwing you out there for the hell of it. And now I need to figure out what else I have, and we're going to pull you as soon as you can, and there's no reason to put you back out,
yeah,
back out there.
Monty even wrestled with not playing Davis or Ashik at all last night just because of how much time they put into the FIBA. But yeah, I mean, he got out there, gave you a little something. But yeah, Ajinta was ruled out before the game, couldn't play. I'm sure we'll see him more in the rest of the preseason. But I don't know, man. I go through the 15 guys that we expect to make this roster, and Jeff Withy is dead last on that list for me. I've pretty much all but given up any chance of him being a rotation player. I see Patrick Young as the fifth big on this team currently, and you know, you look at Withy, and in just 19 minutes last night, he fouls out and gets 3 turnovers. Whatever excuse you want to give him for summer league, that he was hurt going into it, this or that. You know, I was the biggest fan of any when we acquired him, but I don't let those, I'm not going to keep trying to defend him to say I was right then. I was wrong then, and he's the one guy on this roster that I have really no hope or aspirations for in this upcoming season.
Wow.
Poor Jeff Withy. He did get 7 rebounds in his 19 minutes. That's like 7 more than he usually gets.
Yeah.
All right, so you're not expecting Jeff Withy to get 19 minutes during the regular season in relief of Omer. So you think it really is going to be a head-to-head battle between Patrick Young and AA, I'm not even going to try to say it, for the backup center positions?
No,
actually, the question is, do you think there's going to be 10, 15 minutes for someone like that, or do you think the other three bigs are going to eat up every minute possible?
Yeah, I don't think Patrick Young has a chance of being in the rotation. I think it's Ajinta versus Air. You know, if he comes out, supposedly He's like one out of 300 guys this summer who's put on 15 pounds of muscle and blah, blah, blah. But supposedly he's up to about 275. And if he, you know, if in training camp and in the preseason, he makes it impossible to keep him off the court, you know, I think Monty will give him those minutes. And I think Monty will anyway. I mean, it is great to see Ryan Anderson back, but I don't expect him to just come out of the gate playing 30 minutes a night. I mean, this is something, you know, there was a running back for the New York Giants who had the same exact injury, and I can't believe David Wilson. And, you know, he came back, was fully healthy, and, like, literally in the next practice, he gets another stinger and his career's over. I don't know if we're going to see 2,500 minutes for Ryan Anderson this year. I think that they'll try to get in minutes and maybe increase it here and there. I think on back-to-back nights, you know, he might not get as many minutes. I do think that in the regular season, there are some minutes for a fourth big, and I think Ajinso will clearly be that guy.
I don't know. I don't know if I have your faith in Ajinso, but you know, we'll see how it goes. He had his moments last year where he looked pretty good, and in certain situations, particularly when he was playing against lumbering centers, he looked very good at times. Sometimes he looked horrible, and the number of fouls he was generating was insane. And that's got to be like one of the major focuses that Monty has to be looking at is the foul rate. If they can just, I remember. Back in the dawn of time, when Chris Paul was on this team and they actually had a good squad, I did a long piece about what was good about their defense, because they were a top five defense. And they were average at every single thing in the league, at field goal percentage defense, at rebound rate. They were perfectly average across the board, except for at foul rate. And they were the best team in the league at not giving fouls, and that made their defense extremely efficient. And this is the worst. I mean, maybe it wasn't the worst, but these were one of the worst teams in the league at foul rate last year. I can't remember if they were worst or second worst.
Yeah. And I mean, I did mention this to a gents on Twitter. I told him to watch Roy Hibbert and work on getting vertical this summer. And he promised me that he would. I don't know if I could hold him to his Twitter word, but I mean, seriously, he came over from a league where games are just called totally different. You know, he didn't have a training camp last year. He was basically picked up, what was it, like 10, 15 games into the year, thrown in with no training camp and just made to find his bearings. And I think he did fairly well. I'm curious to see, you know, him with the training camp. Like I said, if Ryan Anderson wasn't coming back from an injury, if it was just, you know, him coming back from a regular year, and, you know, even with Monty's tendency to play a full 10-deep rotation, I do think even he would have just played Ryan Anderson, Ashik, and Davis. But I don't know. I'm telling you, I get this sneaky feeling that we'll see Ajinso. And I think part of it is, you know, just to keep him ready or keep a fourth big ready, because, you know, Davis, Anderson, Ashik, all three of them aren't playing 82 games this year. You know, Monty's kind of from the Popovich school as well of, you know, you want guys to get ready. You want them to feel of getting minutes so that when they have to take on a bigger role, they're ready for it. I wouldn't personally do it. I don't want people to ever confuse my articles with what I would personally do. I'm just trying to analyze and predict. But I do believe that Ajinso will be part of the rotation at the beginning of the season.
All right. Let's move on to another topic then.
Move.
So if any of you are big basketball fans and you do not read every article that Zach Lowe writes on Grantland, you're a schmuck. Just want you to know.
Except for you don't have to read his mascots or court design or who has the best jerseys in the NBA. But
even those are kind of entertaining.
Ugh. All right.
But anyway.
It's not fashion school. This is basketball. I'm sick of hearing about alternative jerseys. And who cares? They could wear like a dirty mop rag out there. I just want to hear about basketball. But go ahead.
Well, then, here, let me mean bush you. I'm not going to ambush you. I'm going to mean bush you. What do you think of the new Pelicans court design?
Whatever. Like, I don't know. The new alternate jerseys? Sure, whatever. Like, this isn't a fashion podcast. I will never want to talk about those things. If other people care. But, I mean, the one thing I will say is I don't think people should ever own jerseys with another man's name on it anymore. After what we saw in the NFL, how many millions of people have an Adrian Peterson or Ray Rice? It's like, just stop putting other men's names on your back. You have no clue what goes on in their personal life. So, whatever. That's the only thing I'm going to say about jerseys.
Okay. Alternate jerseys? Terrible. I'm going to say something because I think this is important. The alternate jerseys are terrible. They're plain. They're bland. They're not exciting. If you want an alternate jersey, do something. Go big. Make something cool. Not just like a plain one color thing. No thanks. I like the court design. I think it'll be fun to watch. I don't think it's distracting. It's kind of subtle and neat. I like it. Okay. Sorry. Now let's go back to Zach Lowe. He wrote an article where he talked about new players, or not new players, but players who are in the third year of their contract, their rookie contracts, and decisions are needing to be made about whether their last year's option should be picked up. We saw this happened with Al-Farouq Aminu, where the Pelicans did not pick up his option. And then the following year, they signed him for exactly what his option would have been anyways. But they did not pick him up. So that they could have the flexibility if they needed of, you know, not having those $3 million on their cap. They could renounce him. So Austin Rivers is now up for the same treatment, and it's about the same amount. So Rivers has had a year where he was one of the worst rookies who got minutes ever. And then he had another year where he developed significantly in every phase of the game. He is now 21 years old. What do you think? Do you think that they're going to pick up his option for the next year? Or do you think, and two, is that if they do pick it up, is that good or bad?
Yeah, see, I like Zach Lowe. I think he's great at watching basketball. I do think he hears things around the league. I mean, he did hear that the Pelicans were thinking about you know, at least had thought about stretching Rivers probably a week after we had heard it and kind of knew that the Pelicans had already ruled it out and they were doing something else. So I enjoy a lot more his on-court basketball analysis only because it's impossible to really follow things this closely for all 30 teams. And I see his logic and could kind of tie it to Aminu, but to me, it's a totally different situation. One, Aminu never showed any improvements between those years, where Austin Rivers, year one to year two, there was an improvement. I mean, you could even argue that Aminu had actually taken steps back. So that made it an easier decision for the Pelicans, you know, not to pick up the option, knowing that, it was unlikely that if he hadn't made steps in year two and year three, he wasn't likely to shoot and, make a huge one in year four. So I think there's a different situation there. I think the other thing that's different is the cap is about to skyrocket, and most anticipate that it's going to skyrocket in 2016, but I've actually read a lot where instead of just the huge bump in 2016, that since it's with the same television partners, that the NBA is going to basically assume the new money coming in from the TV contract or even push it forward a little bit, and the salary cap increases are going to be a little bit more gradual than people are going to expect. And thirdly, you know, you work the numbers and you figure out Ashiq's next deal, And really, the only way the Pelicans are a player next summer is if they get rid of Gordon. And if they don't, the $3 million doesn't really help. And if they do, you know, the $3 million isn't going to make that huge of a difference. So I don't think it's like the Aminu situation, for all of those reasons. So while I see a very, you know, a very basic form of some logic there, I don't think it's right, and I think it's a different situation, and I do fully expect for them to pick up Austin's option for next season, and I do think it's the right move. I mean, $3 million where the cap is going is going to be maybe 130% of the league minimum. I mean, for all those reasons, I think it's a different situation.
Yeah, I agree that they should be picking up Rivers. And there's just, for me, it's just a simple thing. When was the last time you heard any coach of the Pelicans say that Al-Farouq Aminu was working really hard on his game?
True.
So, and that's like really telling, because like coaches would even say that if it wasn't entirely true, just because that's what they're kind of expected to say about their players. If you can't remember a time when they say that about someone at all, and you know, you and I read every freaking thing we can about the Pelicans, that probably gives you a pretty clear indication that they're not particularly a hard worker. And pick anybody on this team except for maybe Davis. Is there anybody who they say more about they're working on their game than Rivers?
No. No.
I mean, they glow about his work ethic.
And the other factor is, even if all this wasn't true, you know, there's a hubris issue here where Dell Demps didn't pick Aminu, and he didn't even really trade for them. That was, you know, that was Stern pushing that. Dell Demps picked Austin Rivers. So even if all these other reasons were untrue, for me, you know, that's another X factor where Rivers is putting in all this work. He was your 10th overall pick, and now to maybe save $1.5 million over, you know, what the next league minimum is going to be, you know, you're going to risk letting him go and go into a market where a bunch of teams will have money. If he really, what would you say, like a 60 to 80% leap last year over his rookie year? So, like, I mean, I don't expect that again, but is a 30 to 40% leap unreasonable?
Absolutely is reasonable. And again, he made that leap last year. He's still just 21, and players don't start hitting their peak until 24, based on almost every, you know, graph I've seen of player performance. And I mean, the thing with Rivers too is, you know, he has very discernible basketball skills that could turn him into something as well. So we've said that a million times. His handle is sick.
And those are, and his best skill last year was a spot up three, something we weren't even expecting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you look at this game, 12 points on 8 shots, 6 assists, in 32 minutes, you wish. I mean, again, this is a guy that if he hits his free throws at a normal guard clip, like, no, but, you know, there wouldn't still be the Austin Rivers jokes. It's frustrating. If he hits his free throws, he's 14 points on 8 shots and just has, you know, a beautiful game here. But, yeah, I don't really think it's even a decision. I could see it being a decision the following year, when it goes a little higher, and there's going to be a great 2016 class and Gordon's coming off the books, but I really don't see it even being a choice, this year. And I think I was the first person who wrote an article, you know, the prior year about how Dem shouldn't pick up Aminu's option. I mean, that never made sense to me. And I think Dem's did the right thing there, but to me, this isn't really a choice. I think he definitely should pick up Rivers' option.
I'm sorry. Every article I read on ESPN that talks about Dallas and underrated pickups, Al-Farouq Aminu is amazing. I mean, have you seen his rebounding?
Oh, and he changed his number. Yeah, he's a new man. He's gonna take the world by storm. But no, I mean, I thought it was an interesting article, but you know, push for content, I understand it, but I really don't think it's as much of a decision as Zach seems to think it is.
All right, so let's move on, because I believe you wanted to play a game about different units that this team could be rolling out, and you wanted me to try to predict offensive and defensive ratings per 100 possessions for those units. I don't know if I can go that far. I can tell you good, medium, or bad. Is that okay? Or do I actually have to come up with a number here?
Good, medium, or bad. Yep. Yeah, that sounds like a name game right there. No, I mean, I really thought there were three key units that could really decide a lot of things with this team. I think it's obviously the starting five, the finishing five, which I don't think we'll have any disagreement that we think at least at one position, probably two, those units will be different. And then kind of, you know, this medium five, again, I believe that there will be five reserves on the court at the beginning of every second quarter. And usually that unit will be on at the end of the first as well, end of the third, and maybe the beginning of the fourth. I mean, it's just what Monty does. But I really think that all of those units have the potential to swing games in different ways. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about our starting five, our finishing five, and then, you know, and maybe a bench five if Monty continues with what he normally does.
All right, so let's nail down we're going to have to come to an agreement what we think the starting unit is. I don't think either of us are going to argue that Drew, Anthony Davis, and Omer Sheik are in the starting five. They'll start every game as long as they're healthy. Do you have any disagreement there?
I think you got to add Eric Gordon, too. I don't think there's any.
Okay, so you think Eric Gordon's part of the starting five, no matter what?
No matter what.
Okay, and then small forward. Right now I'm slotting in Salmons. Are you slotting in Salmons?
Man.
Or is Babbitt like so intriguing to you now? You want to jump on the Babbitt wagon.
Babbitt wagon. I like that. I guess for the sake of this, I'll go with Salmons, but I think I'm really pulling for Babbitt, but yeah, let's go with Salmons for now.
Okay. I'll tell you my two basic ideas for offensive and defensive rating for this lineup. And again, Drew, Gordon, Salmons, Davis, Ashik. I think that this will be a top, well, somewhere between 10 and 15 offensively and top 10 defensively.
Yeah, see, I worry a little bit about this offense, about the starting offense. I could see them getting out the slow starts. Again, a lot of this comes from how tentative Drew Holiday was when on the court with Eric Gordon last year. I mean, I have no fears about Anthony Davis. I think that he becomes a 23 to 25 point guy. Clear number one option, especially with this unit starting next year. But I really wonder about the Holiday Gordon combination. I think that Gordon is going to be the guy who, by a pretty clear margin, takes the second most shots of this unit. I don't know particularly how I feel about that. But I really saw Holiday struggle and not be as assertive last year when on the court with Eric Gordon. I also, you know, I think this unit rebounds well, but I don't know if it fast breaks well. aside from the Eric Gordon rolling to the basket, you know, like a bowling ball and hoping to get fouled occasionally, I don't know how many easy fast break points this unit gets. I think it could get a handful of offensive putback kind of cheap points, but I don't think it scores incredibly easily, and I think Drew Holiday is going to have a tougher time with Eric Gordon than he would say Tyreek. So I see the top 10 defense, but I really think this is a unit that could struggle offensively, and you're looking at, you know, maybe bottom 10 to 12. You know, their offensive rating would be where a bottom 10 to 12 team would be. So I struggle a little bit with the offense on this unit, unless Drew Holiday is just totally different than he was last year on the court with Eric Gordon.
You surprised me. And it's not that you think that the offense might struggle, because I have the same feeling there. I think a little bit more highly about it, and you brought up the one reason why I think more highly of it, and it's because I think that Davis and Sheik are going to clean up misses like crazy, and that's going to help the efficiency of this. But I thought you would challenge me on a top 10 defense, because, I mean, really, Salmons over Al-Farouq Aminu and Sheik over Steamsma? Is that really that big of an upgrade defensively?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you think it's like going from 25th to top 10? Do you think it's that big of an upgrade?
But it's not only that. The other thing you're upgrading is Davis, not just because of another year, but because of the ability for him to roam more with the Sheik there. So you're really upgrading Davis as well. You know, Drew, I think, is a huge upgrade. But yeah, I mean, I mean, the only thing that gives me pause is that this unit will be on the court against other starters, and other starters in the NBA are flat out good, and you know, they're going to score the ball regardless of who's on defense. So yeah, I could go either way on that, but yeah, I really think that Davis and Ashik are just going to be an absolute force on pick and rolls. And again, a lot of this has to do with, you know, what kind of system Monty Pitts puts in, which I'm really curious to see. Are we going to see as much of those hard hedges as we did before? So the personnel to me says top 10, or at least it could be, but that's not enough. I need to know the system too, and I don't know that right now.
I have one more question for you about this real quick, though. Drew and Eric Gordon. You seem to feel like it's a bad match between the two. And we saw last year they did struggle. There's not even any question that when they were on the court together, Drew's numbers had a negative effect. They were not as good as they normally were. But you say Eric Gordon will be taking the second most shots of this lineup. Do you feel that Drew should be taking the second most shots? Or is it okay that Eric Gordon's taking the second most shots on this particular lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I think Gordon should. I don't think he should by as much as I anticipate. I mean, I think it'll be by a wide margin. I think I'm a little afraid this season that even though the Pelicans have success, that fans are going to get down on Holiday a little bit. I really think that he might. I think he'll have close to 30 games this season, assuming he plays a full season, in which he scores in single digits. I don't really think he's going to be asked to do that much, or, like I said, he's really not going to force it that much. He's not that assertive, especially when he's on the court with Gordon. I think he's going to focus more on defense, occasional playmaking, and spot-up shooting, but I really worry that people are still, for some reason, going to be assessing that trade, especially now that Nerlens Noel is actually going to be playing in the league, and they're going to be looking just at Holiday's raw numbers as an assessment. And I don't think they're going to be that great this year. I think, you know, I think that Gordon is going to shoot maybe 50 to 60% more shots when they're on the court than Holiday, when to me the number shouldn't be that big.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, because this kind of points to an article I wrote a little earlier about average guards and how the Pelicans seem to have a lot of them. And Gordon is the most efficient scoring guard we have, actually. He scores more per shot and because than Evans and more than Drew, because Evans can't shoot threes. Drew doesn't shoot threes. So, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing that he's finishing those, though. If Drew is turning into just a, I'm going to stand on the 3-point line and see if Gordon wants to kick out to me, that's not good either.
Right, because, yeah, I mean, even if your shots aren't falling, the fact that you're always attacking is going to open, especially when you're a point guard with as good a vision as Holiday has, is going to open things up for the other guys. So that's something that really can't be measured in Holiday's efficiency of, you know, if his man knows he could just lay off him versus you've always got to be worried about Holiday attacking and then the defense gets sucked into that and either shooters are open or Davis is available at the rim. I mean, that's just not measured, you know, when just looking at scoring efficiency. So I just wish he would, you know, attack more when Gordon's on the court. I think that would open it up for everybody. Like, he doesn't have to play like he did in that terrific Portland home game last year every night, but you know, seeing that side of Drew Holiday for stretches in a game, I think would really help this team out. So I guess that's my worry offensively, is I don't think that the backcourt will have as much balance as I would hope it would. I really saw Drew defer to Gordon last year, and I just hope that don't happen again.
All right, let's move on to the next unit you wanted to talk about. And this time you get to give your impressions first, and then I get to mock them. So unit two you want to talk about is your super mega awesome ridiculous second unit that you talked about today, which is Jimmer, Rivers, Evans, Rhino, and Alexis Ajinka, or whatever you say his name.
Ajinka.
Now, you have a caveat. You want to say, against other teams' backups, it's this crew. So this isn't them going up against Kevin Durant and Westbrook and Serge Ibaka. This is them going up against Jeremy Lamb and I don't even know like half their bench anymore. Steven Adams, because he's going to be center.
Anthony Morrow? Come on.
I think he's going to be a starter for them. But anyways.
They're saying that, who was that rookie from a year or two ago out of, oh gosh, I really need to get back into NBA. My brain's too
Jackson? NFL.
No, I know who Reggie Jackson is. No, he was like the 26th pick last year. Whoever their rookie was last year.
Roberson.
Andre Roberson, yeah. They're saying that he's the favorite to start and, you know, kind of get that 15-minute shift, you know, to start game. Well, I mean, you think about it, you're going to want Durant and Westbrook to get all those shots anyway to, you know, get them in the flow. So it makes sense to put a guy who's not going to need shots in there. But anyway, yeah, this is going against backups. I mean, over the summer I did that series where I went back and I looked at the Pelicans games where everybody was healthy. And Monty, it seemed like his tendency was that he would kind of stagger. And then usually around the 2-minute mark of the first quarter, it was all reserves. He would start off the second quarter with those guys to about the 9-minute mark. If they were playing really well, he'd let them go to the 7-minute mark before he started bringing some starters back in. But you've got that 5 to 7 minute stretch in the first half. And then if they played well in the first half, he does it again in the second half, where you've just got the all reserve unit. And my thinking is that if he does that again this year, yeah, it's going to be Tyreek, Jimmer, and Rivers, all three guys that could handle, but with Tyreek being the main ball handler. Ryan Anderson, obviously, and Ajinka in a lineup that would have tons of spacing around Tyreek Evans could just light it up in bunches, similar to what we saw in the second quarter or heard in the second quarter last night. And, you know, has at least some threat of rim protection in Ejinsa, and a guy who was actually a solid defensive rebounder in Ejinsa. And we also saw Evans when he was asked to, able to hit the defensive board. So against second units, I think it could be decent enough as a rebounding unit, decent enough defensively, and on the offensive end, it could just be, I mean, I would expect it to have a higher offensive rating and perhaps even a much higher offensive rating than our starting unit.
So are you saying their offense is so much better than the defense that this is clearly a positive?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like if you remember that Bulls second unit from a couple years ago that had Ashiq and Gibson. Like, mm-hmm. It couldn't score, but nobody scored on it. So it would go for like 6 minutes, and it would outscore the opposing team 7-4. And, like, you know, when your starters go to the bench, if you increase the lead at all, whether it's 7-4 or 17-14, it doesn't matter. It's a net positive, and I think it could kind of be like the inverse of that Bulls unit where it, over a course of 7 minutes, you know, it could outscore a team 20-14. Just, you know, it could be blitzkrieg, and it could be ugly on the defensive end. But I mean, could you find a second unit in the entire NBA that is near the firepower of the five-man unit I just put out? I mean, you have two six-man of the year candidates. You have a guy in Ryan Anderson who, before he got hurt, was leading the team in scoring, would be coming off your bench. A guy in Tyreek who was a monster at the end of the year when given minutes, and was a monster even off the bench last year with Ryan Anderson. I mean, I think that would be far and away the best offensive second unit in the NBA. So who cares how they increase the lead, whether it's, you know, 10-7 or 20-17 over the course of when they're in. I think that unit would be a net positive.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you because I actually agree 100%. I think that there will probably be some matchups that they'll be up against where the other team is going to be cleaning the glass and making them look like schmucks because they're not going to be able to grab a rebound to save their lives. But you're right, and there's also going to be we gotta say this flat out. This will be a streaky team, a streaky unit, because it's reliant on the three and Evans hitting his layups. And you know there are games where Evans looks unstoppable, and then there's games where he goes 2-14 because he can't hit a layup to save his life.
Yeah, because Aminu and Steemsma are on the court. You don't miss layups when there's shooters like this around. I mean, I think that most games they would have a small net positive. I think there's some games that this unit could straight out win. Like the Babbitt unit last night won this game for the Pelicans. Yeah. And that second, in the second quarter, they just, you know, it was over. I mean, we talk about 20-17. I think they could have some 20-4 stretches where it's just, you know, not many, maybe six over the course of the season. But I get really excited about that unit, especially if Ejinsa could play without fouling, you know. But again, it's the beginning of a quarter. You know, they could pick up a couple of fouls, or, you know, that doesn't help you later in the quarter. But, I mean, Ejinsa doesn't have to worry about playing 30 minutes. So, you know, if he gets one or two fouls, it's not a huge deal. I don't know. I really like the idea of that unit, and even wish Babbitt could get in on it. I mean, is there a chance that you're going against a really small team? Let's, you know, and you put Babbitt and Anderson at the 4 and 5. How fun would that be?
Now you're just getting crazy.
Well, I mean, Anderson covered the 5 last year when he was with Davis, right?
True.
So, I mean, and Babbitt, you know, stretch 4. I'm just saying there might be a couple of teams. And I really think that Tyreek, I mean, I don't know what position you consider him, but I think Tyreek Evans is an above-average rebounder for his position and could even, you know, in small stretches be your main rebounder in small stretches. So anyway, I just think that's a very interesting unit and one that could really swing games. And how good would it be to watch our superstar go to the bench and then come back and have the lead increased or go from a deficit to a lead? I mean, we had so many years with Chris Paul where he would get us out to these huge leads and then a terrible bench would come in and then Paul would have to go back and go to work again. How great would it be if 50, 60% of the time Davis goes to the bench and when he comes back in, the Pelicans' lead is increased?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I remember Paul getting like 20-point leads in the fourth quarter. They put in the bench and he'd be back out there with minute four because it'd be like a 5-point lead. And you're like, what just happened?
Yep. Oh, God, that was.
Which brings up unit number three, the finishing five in the fourth quarter. Jrue Holiday, Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans, Rhino, and Anthony Davis. That is what we've talked about all last year. Do you think that has changed with the acquisition of Ashik, or do you still think that is the finishing five that we will see at the end of most games?
Yeah, I would definitely say, I mean, again, if he shows no wear and tear and he seems to be 100% healthy, I would say conservatively 90 to 95% of games, that's the finishing unit. I could see some circumstances. I could see, you know, just Monty getting afraid again of Dwight Howard, you know, things like that. But I think for the most part, 90, 95% of the time, that's the finishing five.
Okay.
So we actually have a small sample size that tells us how good this team is, this particular lineup is, offensive, defensive. I think it was like, what, a whopping 9 games or something like that?
Yeah, offensive rating of about 126.
Which is insane.
Yeah,
like,
insane.
Like the best team was like, what, 109, 110 last year?
Yeah, usually the Spurs are around 109, 110, and this was, they were at 126. So yeah, it's insane.
And then defensively, they were also awful. Like, so they were like a 116 or 117, which...
Yeah, they would have been the best offensive and worst defensive team in the league.
Yeah, and I think they probably would have been the best offensively and worst defensive team in the history of the league, quite honestly, if those numbers actually stayed. So, I mean, part of it is teams are going to, if they actually see this lineup repeatedly, they're going to adjust and they're going to figure things out. But that's true on both sides. Like, the team's not going to be as bad defensively if they've played together more often and know what's going on.
But, I mean, what do you do against that five if Tyreke Evans has the ball in his hand at the top of the key? Like, what do you do? Like, let's not be homers. Let's pretend that we're, you know, a scout for some other team. I have no clue how to defend that team.
You play off of Tyreke Evans like crazy and have two people basically rotate towards AD at any point and have a guy sit on Rhino's hip and not move, and then you let Jrue and EG be EJ be the deciders if they can hit their shots or not. Basically, you pick the poison of a Jrue Holiday or an Eric Gordon spot-up three-pointer.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, it's not optimal.
I mean, you're going to yield 1.4 points per possession if you do that, but okay.
How would you defend it?
I wouldn't.
You're going to force the ball to Anthony Davis' hands and hope he misses a post-up?
Honestly, that's probably what I would do. Okay. I would probably allow, I don't.
That's the only other option I could think
of. I don't think you could sag off Evans because I think he's even, when he has space, one guy sagging off Evans ain't going to stop him. He's just going to charge right at him and Eurostep.
He is a freak. I mean, that is the funniest thing about Evans. It's like, you watch people, like Rondo. If you sag off of Rondo, he's going to drive. He might find a shooter who comes open if somebody helps on him, but he's not going to get to the rim very easily. And there's a lot of guys you could say that about. Evans has this like freak ability of like, if you let him get going, so he's actually moving at speed, you're screwed.
Yeah, and I mean, you could play off of him, and then when you've also got Aminu and Steemsma on the court, then send a second guy, you know, as well when Evans gets to the rim. But a unit like this, I don't care how you play Evans one-on-one, you know, there's absolutely no way there's absolutely no way you could play that unit. So, no, if they're healthy and, you know, Drew and Gordon are hitting their spot-ups, it's absolutely impossible to stop. You got to hope that on the other end, you know, you could get them into foul trouble. You could live at the, you know, you could live at the line over the last couple minutes, you know, just drawing fouls, and you're already in the bonus, and maybe slow the game down like that, because you don't want to miss a shot against this unit either, because if they get a rebound and Evans pushes, like they might even be more deadly on the break, or they are more deadly on the break than they are in half court. So I don't know. I think you could. Obviously, they couldn't sustain a 126 or so offensive rating throughout the year, but I don't think something like 114 is unreasonable.
I don't disagree. I mean, and, you know, we said, just to clarify, we said 110 is the best. That's like for the whole team.
Right.
There are definite units out there that roll at, like, you know, 115 around there. Like the best, like Steve Nash's best units during the 7 seconds or less usually rolled at around like 114, 115. So I would be surprised if it was actually that high. I think it's going to settle down a little bit and be like around 112 or 113. I'll be 100% honest, though. I fully expect this team's defense to be about a 110 still, though. I don't think it's going to be like a huge. I mean, if they could be league average and pull off a 104 or a 105, that's a team that's going to murder people. I don't know that this defense, I look at it and it's scary bad.
Who's more important to it? Who would be more important to have a better defensive season than they had last year? Either more important or more likely, Eric Gordon or Ryan Anderson?
I think Eric Gordon is more important, but I think Ryan Anderson is more likely.
So you've just given up. I mean, Eric Gordon, I mean, you remember that first game he ever played in a Hornets jersey against the Suns. End of the game, he just locks up Steve Nash after he had, you know, kind of. He had put the team ahead. They put him on Nash, locks him up. You remember Jerry Colangelo's comments about how he was one of the, if not the best, on-ball defenders at Team USA. I mean, this is a guy who used to be quasi-elite on-ball defender. Those days, in your opinion, are 100% gone and never likely to return?
No, and I actually think Eric Gordon could be, has shown last year, he could be a good on-the-ball defender, actually. And I will never argue that he's a bad on-the-ball defender. But this, he is perhaps one of the worst help defenders around. And if he's stuck in certain situations, like anywhere near the basket on a roll, if he's supposed to be the guy, you know, popping down from the corner to bump a roll guy, he may as well not even be there for the effort he's putting out to do that. And if your pick and roll defense is reliant on that guy flashing down and then flashing back out if they kick out to their guy and just bumping the roll guy long enough for the big man to recover, Gordon is never giving that to you, which means you've just given up on the pick and roll defense. And I don't think Tyreek is particularly good at it either. So it's not like you can just try to, like, hide Eric Gordon on the opposite side of the floor, which, you know, good teams won't let you do anyways. I don't ever see that he's going to be the guy who's going to, like, flare down and actually impede the big man in any way. So, I don't know. Do you disagree?
No, and this is where I still wonder, what is the system going to be? I mean, he spent all that time with Thibodeau this summer. You know, supposedly he already said he learned you know, other things. He finally has his center that he's long coveted. I'm really curious to see what our system is, and you know, if Gordon has to help less, obviously, you know, that'll be a big boost. You know, so I guess I would need to know that first. But I mean, I totally agree. I mean, we've talked about how terrible he is as a help defender here for quite a while. I think the unit, I mean, if you're looking at places where it could improve, obviously Davis can improve. I also think that, again, another year in Monty's system, you know, we only had, I had one Twitter follower who was actually at the Pelicans Heat game kind of, you know, communicating with me, and he said that Salmons just looked completely lost out there. And this is a multi-year vet who's been in most, if not all, kinds of defensive systems. And he's having a little bit of a tough time picking it up. I mean, I think that there's a chance for Tyreke to improve, you know, with an extra year in the system. So I do think that this unit as a whole could be better, with a lot of that coming from Gordon being healthier than he has ever been, and Tyreke being a better off-ball defender than he was, you know, just a year ago.
All right. Money where your mouth is, though. Does this lineup, is it a league average defensive possibility this
year? Yeah, I would guess something like offensive rating of 114, defensive rating of 106.
Okay, so slightly worse than average, but pretty close.
But way better than last year, yeah.
Okay, all right. I guess we'll I'll accept that.
Yeah. So I mean,
I do want to bring up one thing though. I don't know if you got a chance to see this, but it wasn't media day, so our crew wasn't there. But the day after, the first day of training camp, Pelicans did release a whole series of videos. Did you get to watch those?
Yeah, I did.
Did you see the question posed to Omar Asik about the defensive system, what system he thought it, if it was familiar at all, and if he was going to be able to pick it up quickly? Did you see that question?
I remember him saying he was trying to get a hold of it, but I don't remember who he compared it to.
So they asked him, they said, so you've been a couple different places, and do you feel like this is a system similar to anything you've done before? And he said, not at all like Houston. It's very similar to what they did in Chicago.
Hmm.
Which made me smile, because if it's similar, if it's a Thibodeau system, it can't be bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really wonder if... Yeah, I really wonder if a big part of the hard hedging was to try as much as possible to keep teams. I mean, we've seen Monty Williams go to crazy extremes to protect the paint in the last couple of years. Now that he has his anchor, you know, maybe he trusts that guy with defending the paint more, and the system will have to do it less.
Wait, are you saying that maybe he didn't trust Steemsma to pick up guys driving to the basket
or
and defend?
Slow-footed him? Robin Lopez, or, you know, who else did he have? Who even was at, oh, Okafor, but
Kamen,
Fighter of the Nightman. Yeah, Kamen, and then who was the back, oh, Aaron Gray. I was trying to think of the backup his first year.
Wait. I'm not going to let you talk bad about Aaron Gray. He was amazing.
Oh, Gray matters. yeah, so it's extremely possible, and that's why, I really can't wait, you know, till we get there. I'm excited about this season. I'm very hopeful about this season, which also terrifies me. Yeah. I'm not one of those playoff or bust people, but I'm one of those, we're a good team, you know, and a very good team at the second half of the year, or bust type of people. All right.
Let me ask you the question then. What number of wins, provided the team stays reasonably healthy? Like, you get 70 games from, or 75 games from most of the big guys on this team. What number would you be disappointed at when it came to wins?
I think anything less than 44.
Okay.
But again, it's all how they come. If this team starts off slow because it's trying to mesh, and then also has that hard part of the schedule, but then right around January picks it up and is one of the better teams in the NBA and just misses the playoffs because they're in a crazy West, then I wouldn't be dissatisfied going into the following season, where I think the future just gets brighter and brighter. So to me, it doesn't matter if they were a top team that just missed the playoffs or they make the playoffs and lose in the first round at that point. I just want to see that, more than anything, that there's a clear vision on this team that makes sense. What is this team supposed to be? I don't expect it to be the best version of itself this year, but I want to see that vision in the second half of next season. But I mean, you can't control your wins. There's a ton of good teams out in this league too. I mean, so you can't really control that. It's not just because you don't win on a given night doesn't mean you're a bad team. Like, there's 29 other, well, sorry, Philadelphia don't count. There's 28 other teams out there trying to win as well. It doesn't mean you're a bad franchise if you lose. There are other franchises trying to win as well, and a lot of well-assembled rosters out there as well. So yeah, that would be my goal, is just that they're playing very good basketball and there's a clear vision for what they're going to be over the next couple of years by the time we reach January, February, March, and to me, playoffs and a playoff run is gravy on top of all that.
Yep. All right, so I guess we're done with this podcast. We'll probably be having another one pop out a little later this week where we start talking about Eastern Conference. We'll have another podcast following a few more of these games on our normal time. And then, of course, we'll probably have a Western Conference preview as well, coming up in a little bit closer to the start of the season, since we all care about the Western Conference more than the loser Eastern Conference, which is a really bad sell for me to say, because Senator, I just told you that our podcast is coming out a little later this week with Eastern Conference. So ignore what I just said. The Eastern Conference is unbelievably interesting, the most interesting conference in the world.
Speaking of the Eastern Conference, tune in on your radios. Gather the family around with some hot cocoa tomorrow, Monday, 6:30 Central Time, as New Orleans goes to Atlanta. And, I'm not going to even make the jokes about anything associated with their crowd or what their team president might think of it.
Thanks for listening to In the Know.